And good afternoon and welcome to Tom Harris USA, episode number 59. This is Tom Harris in Chicago, Illinois, and it's dark outside. It's really dark outside, and that wouldn't be so unusual if I were recording the show at night, but it's 4:45 in the afternoon. My goodness. Well, that's just part of winter, I guess. And you know, we're 4 days away from the winter solstice, the shortest day of the year. And so then after that point, the days will start getting longer again. But it is very odd, you know, because there are a lot of days when I don't get up until, you know, 11 or 12. So that makes for a kind of a very short period of daylight, and you can kind of go out and about and be productive out in the world. Today, Pete and I went downtown, and this was a kind of a dual-purpose trip, and part of it was just so I could spend some time with Pete. But also, I had another interview today at a agency. As I mentioned on previous show, Pete is also looking for a job right now and has not been able to find anything yet. So I went ahead and sent him to one of the agencies that I'm dealing with, and he signed up with them, and they're going to try to find him some temp work, because I found out on my last visit to them that they actually do temp placements for chefs and line cooks, and that's the sort of thing that he's looking for right now. So hopefully that'll work out. And I've talked about the agency interviews before and kind of how the agency's got. And it took a while for the agencies to actually kind of pick up on my resume. Last time I was looking for a job was a couple of years ago, and it was before the economy started to decline. So I actually had quite a few of the agencies pick up on my resume right away. But this time has been a lot slower, but they're starting to now, and I'm starting to get a lot of calls from agencies. And I hate to say no to any of them, but I might, because I'm thinking, you know, what happened last week with this organization that I interviewed with? I think what happened was, you know, I had both of these agencies actually send my name for this job. And I don't know how good that is, you know, because obviously I'm not going to go and interview with them twice. So that could actually, I think, maybe hurt me in the long run. But as of now, still don't have any real prospects for any kind of work, though there has been more interest. And that is what I'm looking forward to right now is you know, all the agencies say that the jobs are coming back, and all of them say that they have more requests now than they did at this time last month. And being December, it's their time of year to be slow. So now this is one of those situations now, because now we're going into the holidays. So if I don't get anything this week, then I'm not going to be able to get anything before the new year, because a lot of the companies are having downtime. They're, you know, having people who have the week of the holidays off, and restricted hours and things of that nature. So I, you know, coming into this 2 week holiday period, I'm going to, probably have a pretty quiet holiday as far as inquiries for my resume and so forth. I think I talked about last time, I do have now plans for New Year's Eve. I might have mentioned this before, but I'll mention it again, just in case people haven't heard. New Year's Eve, I'm going to be going down to downtown Chicago. My best friend and his wife are coming to Chicago. They're spending Christmas Day with his sister in Rockford, and they should be here sometime in the next few days. And then New Year's Eve, they're going to stay down here, and we're going to go to dinner and hang out on New Year's Eve. With he and his wife and Pete and I. So that ought to be fun. So speaking of the holidays, I have some Christmas correspondence, holiday cards. Actually, neither one of these says Christmas on it. And I'm not going to read them, but I had a very nice card from my friend Jason. Thank you, Jason, if you're listening to the show, which you might be. Jason and David are They live here in Chicago. Jason was one of my fraternity brothers from Delta Lambda Phi, so it's always nice to hear from him. And I had a very nice card from my mom's cousin, Marty, and she and her husband went to Australia this year, so their card has a letter with it, sort of a holiday letter, and they're talking about their trip to Australia to see the wildflowers. And so that's quite nice as well. I haven't gotten as much holiday mail this year as I did last year, but there could well be some more on the way. Have a couple of new comments here this week, and one of them is an audio comment from Trucker Tom, which I'll get to in a minute. But I have an email here from our friend Robert Pels in Iceland, and Robert sent a little holiday story for us. And he also sent it to a couple other people, but you know what? I have less lag time on releasing my show, so I get it first. Anyway, Robert sent us a little holiday story, so I'm gonna go ahead and read this. And you know what? I'm going to put some music behind this because I think it's really charming. So here we go. And this is entitled, A Christmas Message from His Holiness, the King of the Vikings. The snow is falling, and yet in the land of the lost sock, the Dodas snore away the nighttime, safe in the knowledge that from the far north, the big guy is setting off to deliver gifts to the people of the world. Upon waking, they eat their breakfast of credit crunch, which it has to be said keeps one regular. They know this because it is made from bankers' bonuses, and it's full of... The Dodas have spent the year stuffed down between the gaps in sofas, chairs, under books, and other dark and dusty places. Their purpose in life, for yes, they have one, is to change the channels on the TV, radio, oven, and just about every other damn thing that the humans cannot be bothered to get off their lazy butts to do themselves. And yet, upon this time of year, the Dodas return to the land of the lost sock to have their party. And that, dear friends, is why you cannot find them at this time of year, for they and their partners, the car keys, have buggered off. Robert Louis Pels. So, thank you very much, Robert, in Iceland, for your story of the Dodas. That was very nice of you to send that along. And hopefully the other folks that you send it to will play this out on their show as well, because it's quite a charming little story there. And it's always a pleasure to hear from you, as it is to hear from everybody who listens to the program. I love getting mail. And you can write to the show if you like. You can write at the email address for the show, which is tom@tomharrisusa.com. I have an audio clip here, and this is from Trucker Tom from the Trucker Tom podcast. And he had this to say on the topic of Kent Hovind's doctoral dissertation, which I talked about in the last episode. So take it away, Tom.
Hey Tom, Tom Wiles here, aka Trucker Tom. Just listened to your latest podcast, and it's very interesting you talking about the guy with the diploma, PhD diploma from the diploma mill, and you know, I agree with you that. What the guy was trying to say, and by the way, the way he was trying to say it, with that poorly written thesis, at least the parts that you quoted, are pretty absurd. Now, I do believe in God, and I do believe that, you know, I guess you could say I do believe in creation. However, I also believe in evolution, and so my argument would be that, as you were noting, that you know, the evidence is there that evolution occurred, but we really don't understand the mechanism yet. And I would contend that that part of it is the God part. In order to really understand it, you have to include the idea that there's a creator. And I know that kind of flies in the face of what people want. You know, they want to kind of create a model that doesn't require the existence of a God or a creator. And so that will probably, I don't know, we may never know one way or the other. It may not be provable one way or the other, you know, because how you, that's just one of those, you know, the idea you can prove that God exists or you can prove that he doesn't. I don't see that, at least currently, I don't see how you could ever do that, either for or against. But so in any case, enjoying the show. Keep up the great work. We'll catch you later.
And thank you, Trucker Tom, for that comment. It's always nice to hear from you, sir. And Trucker Tom does a podcast which is almost daily, and it is the Trucker Tom podcast. You can listen to that at www.truckertompodcast.com. So obviously, now, from what you're saying here, Tom, and I understood this to be the case already, as in many of the people who I know, who I'm friends with, who are religious, they're not literalists as far as biblical creation. They're willing to accept the actual realities of evolution as we have the evidence for it. I mean, we have a lot of, there's a lot of ambiguity, of course, and there's a lot of things that we don't fully understand, but we're understanding more all the time, and that's because the fossil record is yielding us more and more and more data all of the time, and every year, you know, thousands more fossils are being cataloged and studied, and we, of course, as time goes on, have a much greater understanding of evolution as time goes on. And a lot of this goes back to, you know, when you're talking about evolution. And this is something that a lot of the biblical literalists, like Mr. Hovind, have a problem with, is they believe that, you know, the Bible is literally true, that the universe was created in six literal 24-hour days and that God rested on the seventh. And, you know, the more information you have, the more real knowledge that you have on the fossil record and geology and DNA and all of the other disciplines that kind of feed into the theory of evolution as we understand it. You know, they don't have that body of knowledge, or they reject that body of knowledge in favor of their rather narrow religious point of view. And it doesn't need to be that way, because one of the things that they do a lot, and they get it mixed up, evolution mixed up with ambiogenesis. And ambiogenesis is the study of the origins of the universe. It's not the same thing as evolution at all. And I've said often on the show before, nobody really knows how the universe came into existence. We have ideas. We have data that would support one theory or another. But, you know, it can be proven without a doubt that it didn't happen in six literal 24-hour days. and it is frustrating, because the, and not even because people believing in a divine creator, because there's plenty of room there for that. You know, because we don't know, and it's very easy to come and say, well, we don't know what caused this, therefore I believe it was a god. And I don't agree with that, but yeah, I don't really have any problem with that, because it's not provable. We can't observe it. Nobody was around to see the universe begins. And I doubt, like you said, I doubt we're ever going to know. I doubt that we're ever going to really know for sure. But of course, there's a lot of people take it on faith that some sort of supreme being created the universe and then allowed the natural processes to take their course, including evolution, and we ended up through that, those processes, through evolution and geology and plate tectonics and so forth, with the world that we have today. And no atheist, or no, I should say, no intellectually honest atheist is going to say that that is completely impossible. And that's one of the reasons why a lot of atheists don't like to use the word atheist. They would rather use the word agnostic. That's fine with me. I've seen enough evidence against God to call myself an atheist. I don't have any belief in one, because I haven't, quite frankly, seen enough evidence to support one. So, I mean, that's kind of where I stand. But as far as ambiogenesis, we don't know. We don't know how it happened, and we probably never will. And there's plenty of religious people out there who are theistic evolutionists who believe that God started the ball rolling, and then, you know, and we ended up with the fossils and the oil and all the other things that the literalists will deny happened, or at least they'll deny it happened, you know, millions of years ago. They'll say it happened 6,000 years ago, which is about the time the Sumerians invented glue. But the fact of the matter is that it's the people who are the literalists, the ones like Kent Hovind, and the ones like Michael Behe, or like Ken Ham, who really are part of the problem, because they are, in a lot of ways, they're keeping people of faith from investigating the truth of the physical world. Because they're saying, well, you can't believe this because this goes against what you're supposed to believe, and therefore you shouldn't even look at the evidence. You shouldn't, you know, you just, it's all a lie, you know, it's anti-religion. Science isn't anti-religion. None of the people who formulated these theories were trying to disprove God. And in fact, a lot of the people who were formulating these theories and making these observations, and we're talking back in the 1700s and 1800s, like, you know, Darwin and before Darwin, they expected to find a world consistent with the Bible. They really expected to find that. And the fact that they didn't caused a lot of internal soul searching in these scientists, including Darwin. Darwin had struggles with religion. Not all his life, but certainly during the time when he was doing most of his field work, because he was saying, well, this would tend to, you know, disprove a biblical creation in a literal sense. And people in the 19th century were smart enough to know it's not compatible. The observations they're making of the reality of the world is not compatible with this literalist view. But it's these literalists, these American evangelicals mainly, who are trying to get biblical literalism put into public school systems. And that is one of the things that I have come out very strongly against. And I've talked about on the show maybe even too much. But it is an important thing. We need to keep religion out of the schools. Well, okay, and then put this another way. Let's not so much keeping religion out of schools, because I had a Bible as literature course in high school, and this was during the time when I was a Christian, that I enjoyed very much. But I would say we need to keep it out of science class. And let's restrict it to philosophy and literature and comparative religions, and that's where it needs to be. Or even better yet, in church or in your home. I had a discussion about this once, actually, several years ago with my uncle. And my uncle is sort of a right-wing type. He's not a rabid, religious right evangelical, but he is a Christian, I believe, and we had this discussion some years ago. And one of the positions that I take is that we shouldn't be teaching religious values in school. You know, this is something that my uncle and I have disagreed on, and he thinks that, you know, they should teach this in school. And my argument to that, of course, is that, you know, what morality are you going to teach? Are you going to teach a Christian morality? Are you going to teach a Muslim morality? Are you going to teach a Jewish morality? Are you going to teach a Hindu morality? You know, what is going to be the basis of the moral code that you're teaching kids in school? And I don't honestly believe that any kid gets their morality from school. Even if they go to a religious school. You know, I don't think they get their morality from school. They get their morality from their parents. They get their morality from their family. It doesn't come from your English teacher. Did you get morality in school? Or did you get it from your church and you get it from your family? I'd like to know. Anyway, thanks, Tom, for your comment. I always like hearing from you, sir. I have been busy this week, and sort of just as a matter of personal interest, and not really for the show, just not really for any reason other than just my own edification. I have actually investigated this doctoral dissertation more. And I actually at one point was considering, maybe I should do a weekly feature of excerpts from this paper. It is hilarious, some of the things that this guy was talking about. And I've thought again about it. And I've kind of decided not to do it. And in part because it's too easy a target. It's too easy to make fun of the guy and his clear misunderstanding of science and really sort of blatant misrepresentations of it. And I think it's maybe a little bit too mean, to do that. But I did also, just to see, when it investigated this diploma mill where Kent Hovind got his degree. And at the time he got it, it was called Patriot University. Nowadays they refer to it as Patriot Bible University. Well, there's a reason for that. And the reason for that is they were forced to change their name, back in the 1980s because they were doing selling a lot of these degrees. And they are not accredited by any sort of accrediting body. And they managed to get approval from the state of Colorado, which is where they're based now. They originally started out in Texas somewhere. But they're now in Colorado Springs, Colorado. And they got certification from the state of Colorado to operate as a Bible school. But not for anything else. So the degrees they offer now isn't the same. They don't even offer the degree that philosophy degree that Kent Hovind claims to have earned. They don't even offer that anymore. Now they have all of their degree programs now are degrees in Bible education and that sort of thing. They're all religious based now. Now, this doesn't keep them from being a diploma mill. I have a list here of the characteristics of diploma mills, and I'll go ahead and kind of read each of these off. Now, this is actually from Wikipedia, and this is applying to kind of schools worldwide. So here's the characteristics of diploma mills that differentiate them from a real school. They lack accreditation by a nationally recognized accrediting agency. Though not all unaccredited institutions of higher learning are diploma mills. And this is true of Patriot Bible College. They are not accredited by any nationally recognized accrediting agency. However, they are accredited by an accreditation mill. This exists too, and this is a form of false advertising. No teaching facilities. The address is a postal box or mail forwarding service or suite numbers. This is largely true of Patriot Bible University. Getting a degree requires no visits to the school or other face-to-face meetings with its personnel. That's true of the school. Now, this is different from distance education institutions like the University of Phoenix, because those are actually accredited institutions. But in this case, it is not, and therefore this would indicate that it's a diploma mill. There's little or no interaction with professors. That is true of that. The name of the institution is deceptively familiar to well-known reputable universities. That's not true for Patriot Bible College. Degrees can be obtained within a few days, weeks, or months from the time of enrollment, and backdating is possible. Yes, this is very much true of Patriot Bible College. There are either no faculty members or they hold advanced degrees from the institution itself or from other diploma mills. Not quite sure about that one. Academic credit is offered for life experience. Yes, that's true of Patriot Bible University. Tuition and fees are based on a per degree basis. That is true. Prospective students are encouraged to enroll now before tuition or fees are increased. I don't think that's the case with them. Institution has no library, personnel, publication, or research. That is true. In short, very little that is tangible can be found about the institution, and that's true of Patriot Bible University. Doctoral theses and dissertations are not available from University Microfilms International or a national repository or even the institution's own library if it has one. That's true. Promotional literature contains grammatical and spelling errors. let's see, words in Latin, extravagant or pretentious language, and sample diplomas. The school's website looks amateurish or unprofessionally made. Can't really say that for them. The school is situated in the United States, but the website does not have an EDU top-level domain. That's true of Patriot Bible University. The school is advertised using spam email? I don't think so. Jurisdiction shopping. The school is situated in another country or legal jurisdiction where running Diploma Mills is legal, standards are lax, or prosecution is unlikely. I don't know that for Patriot Bible University. Despite being situated in such a Diploma Mill-friendly country, the school has no students from that country and is run entirely by non-native staff. That's not applicable. Unusual academic subjects. Instead of hard sciences, where competence is easier to verify, the subjects are esoteric and may be based on a pseudoscience, e.g. astrology, natural healing, and religious literature. This makes external verification impossible, because when they define their science, they can also define their educational standards without external oversight. That describes them exactly. So you can see, out of these several different things, they match most of them. And therefore, you can ascertain that this Patriot Bible University is in fact a diploma mill. Now, interestingly enough, you know, that they have all these things on their website about how they are under attack, and this is not atypical, to be honest, of evangelical Christianity, and particularly the fundamentalists, because any time you disagree with them, they're automatically under attack. But they are actually, you know, saying, you know, this dissertation, the release of this dissertation has actually put a lot of pressure on them, because they are being revealed as a diploma mill. And the position taken by their website, they actually have a page devoted to this. And their website actually says, you know, who are you going to believe, Wikipedia or us? because Wikipedia has an article about them. And, you know, this is pretty typical of these diploma mills. Now, I have a feeling that their insistence on backing Kent Hovind, who I might mention is actually in prison right now for 10 years for not paying his taxes, naughty, naughty boy, might actually end up causing them some real problems down the road, because they're doing what they feel is right by taking a stance to support Kent Hovind, but it's actually giving them more spotlight, which is going to be very bad ultimately for their business. Anyway, if you have $1,899 to spare, you can get a doctorate from Patriot Bible University. Now, it looks as though in order to do that, you actually would have to buy some of their courses. They actually have courses. I think you're required in this case to buy the package, which I think is 36 courses, and you have to write a paper. But as we've seen with Ken Hovind's paper, the standards that they require are very, very low. And they probably don't actually look at them. So it's interesting. It's very interesting. And I think that really more needs to be done in this country. And it may interest you to know that the United States is considered a diploma mill haven, because the United States doesn't have a federal law that prohibits diploma mills. And maybe that's something that should be considered. Anyway, that's it for now. I'm running out of time. So again, if you want to write to the show, the email address is tom@tomharrisusa.com. I always love hearing from people, and we haven't been getting much mail lately. So yeah, things have been a bit slow on the emails lately. So write in. I always like hearing from people. Anyhow, I'm just about out of time, so I'm going to go ahead and sign off for now. If I don't talk to you before, which I probably will, then have a great holiday. And from Tom at Tom Harris USA, Merry Christmas and a very Happy New Year.